Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
This is the Read to Lead podcast, episode 97.
Hi, I'm Jim Roddy, author of Hire Like You Just Beat Cancer. I don't know if I'd hire this guy, but I sure enjoy his show. It's the Read to Lead podcast with my friend, Jeff Brown.
Characteristic of leaders is that they're very clear about what they believe in, and they don't compromise it. And a characteristic of average people is that they're not clear about what they believe in.
Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Jeff believes that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then consistent and intentional reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but also bring you key insights and valuable feedback from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. And now, here's Jeff.
Hi there, and thank you for joining me for the podcast that is dedicated to your personal and professional growth. Each week, we sit down with a successful and inspiring business book author. We chat about their latest book and, depending on their area of expertise, their thoughts on things like leadership, personal development, productivity, career, marketing, business, and entrepreneurship. In today's episode, you and I get to sit down with Brian Tracy. Yeah, that Brian Tracy, the one and only, author of over 50 books and co-author, along with Christina Stein, of Find Your Balance Point, Clarify Your Priorities, Simplify Your Life, and Achieve More. I plan to ask Brian about the importance of identifying your values and how to do it exactly, why putting your own happiness ahead of that of others is the right thing to do, believe it or not, how to effectively set and accomplish your most important goals, and a lot more. If you've read the same articles and studies I have and have come to the conclusion that sitting all the time is slowly killing you, check out the UpDesk. They are sponsoring the Read to Lead podcast. They build some pretty awesome motorized desks, among other things. By the way, I never mentioned this, but they ship the desks for free. And all of their height-adjustable desks come with a 5-year warranty. My parents were visiting this past week, and I was showing them mine, and they just thought it was the coolest thing. This little button you just press on the desk to raise it and lower it to whatever height you need it at. Check them out at readtoleadpodcast.com/desk. It's an awesome product that I think you are going to love. This episode of the Read to Lead podcast, sponsored in part by SoFi, leading marketplace lender. You can save thousands when you refinance your federal and private student loans at lower rates with SoFi. And as a listener to this show, you can take advantage of a special Read to Lead only special, which is a $200 welcome bonus when you refinance your student loan. Go to SOFI.com/readtolead. Brian Tracy is chairman and CEO of Brian Tracy International. As a keynote speaker and seminar leader, he addresses more than 250,000 people each year. He is the best-selling author of more than 50 books that have been translated into dozens of languages. Brian is also the co-author, along with Christina Stein, of the book Find Your Balance Point, Clarify Your Priorities, Simplify Your Life, and Achieve More. Brian, it is a delight to have you on the Read to Lead podcast. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, here at the outset, I think it's important that we understand, before we go any further, how you and Christina define true balance. Can you expound on that for us?
True balance means that you are completely in harmony on the inside with what you're doing on the outside. Mm. And, you know, this is one of the biggest and most important issues today, because when I began studying human success, what I found was a characteristic of leaders, men and women who are, let's say, a little bit more advanced than others, is that they're very clear about what they believe in, and they don't compromise it. Mm-hmm. And a characteristic of average people who are often frustrated and unhappy is that they're not clear about what they believe in, and then they'll compromise it at any opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So it's important to identify our values then. So how can we be absolutely certain, Brian, that we're starting from the right place?
Well, Earl Nightingale once said that if you listen to your intuition and you trust your inner voice, you'll probably never make another mistake. And what I found very early in the game was that if you can imagine a tire on a car, when it's completely in balance, it goes around smoothly. But if a tire gets out of balance for any reason at all, what happens is the tire starts to wobble. And driving down the road of life, it's very similar, Jeff, is what happens is if you are your life is in balance, you feel in harmony. I think you feel that your outer world and your inner world are congruent so that they run smoothly. And the other is alignment. People, you are your tires, your wheels, if you like, are in alignment. Mm. And how do you know? You're happy. The very first indication of being out of alignment is stress. With a car, it wobbles. In your life wobbles. Mm. And you feel unhappy. Even if you accomplish something worthwhile, you don't get any joy from it. There's a wonderful book now called The Magic of Tidying Up. And in this book, they tell you to take everything you have in a closet and put it all in the center of the room, and then begin the tidying up process by picking up each item and saying, does this spark joy? Does this item spark joy? Mm. This is a bestseller. Millions of books are sold. It's on the New York Times list because people start to look at the stuff in their lives and say, does this spark joy? And the answer is probably not. She says, then throw it away. And that's how you get your physical world tidied up. So a really good question, I think, is when you look at your life and your activities, ask, does this spark joy? Does this make me happy? Do I have joy when I do this? And if not, then the next question is, what are you going to do about it?
I was intrigued particularly by the list you provide in the book, Brian, on the obstacles to happiness. The very first one is this sort of sense of undeservingness. Can you talk about that a little bit and even some of the other obstacles that are applicable to most of us?
Yeah, and that is one of the biggest challenges. I began teaching what you might call the psychology of success 35 years ago. Mm. And I did a deep dive into modern psychology. And what I came up with on the other side was the fact that a feeling of undeservingness, which is characterized by the words, I'm not good enough, lies at the root of almost all unhappiness in human life. And it goes right back to early childhood. One of my rules is that wherever you see an unhappy adult, you see a difficult childhood. Because very early in childhood, children who are just becoming, and they're almost like clay that's not set, they're being formed by their external experiences, are subjected to negativity of all kinds, criticism and physical punishment and lack of attention, a lot of things like that. And the child is incapable of reasoning. So the child just concludes that if my mommy or daddy or other people treat me this way, it must be because there's something wrong with me. It must be because I'm not good enough. And this nagging feeling bothers people throughout their lives. You know, what happens is that if they are successful later in life, they strive to compensate for this feeling by achieving material success, and then they engage in self-defeating behaviors. They drink too much, eat too much, engage in behaviors that very often cause the success that they have acquired to slip through their fingers. Robin Williams is famous for his one-liner. He said, cocaine is God's way of telling you that you've got too much money. and you'll find that this series Narcos is on Netflix right now. Mm. It's talking about how the cocaine just swept over successful America. And people who are successful started consuming it in absolutely huge quantities. And it's all this feeling of undeservingness. And so one of the things that we teach people to say from the very beginning is, I like myself. I like myself. I like myself. And what we have found is whatever message you can take and repeat to yourself over and over again, like a pile driver, you drive it deeper and deeper into your subconscious mind. And as it goes deeper, what happens is it starts to neutralize all the limiting beliefs that are inconsistent with the new message. So as you keep saying it over and over, I like myself, I like myself. Many of my students say, I love myself, I love myself. And when you first say it, first couple of times, you feel very uncomfortable, like it's something illicit, like this is, you know, somebody may catch me, or this is really not the right, this is not true, or this is not the right thing. And but as you keep repeating it, you simply actually beat down the resistance from your subconscious program in your history. And eventually you start to get into it and you start to genuinely like yourself. Now, here's the most wonderful thing about this, because this is very much in harmony with your values. Is that more you like yourself, the more you like others. And the more you like others, the more they like you right back. And virtually all of our happiness in life comes from being in relationships with people that we like or love and who like or love us. And it goes right back to the core, is how much do you like yourself?
And that kind of goes, too, to a thought I wanted to ask about, this idea that, you know, putting others and their needs before our own is something that many of us have been taught at one time or another that we should be doing. But Brian, though, says that when it comes to happiness, we need to put ourselves first. So Brian, how can we do that and not be considered selfish people?
Well, this was a real shock for me, because I was brought up in what is generally called negative religion. And negative religion is where they imbue you with wrong ideas that are impossible for you to live up to, so you always feel guilty. And it's pre-programmed, it's designed meticulously by psychic and psychological geniuses to basically make you an emotional cripple for your whole life. They say, for example, to want to be successful and to earn a lot of money and so on is wrong. It's greedy. It's opposed to the poor. Well, successful people have done more to help the poor than all the poor have done to help the poor in all of history. So this whole idea that wanting to be happy is greedy, the rule is that you cannot give away what you don't have. And this was a shock to me when I first learned this. You say, well, I'll be unhappy, but somehow as a result of my unhappiness, I will make others happy. I will be a miserable mother or father, but somehow I'll make my children happy. No, if you love your children, be a happy parent. If you love your spouse, be a happy spouse. If you love your friends, be a happy person. And then when I was 21, I had another great shocker. It's interesting. There's a rule that says that every major change in your life starts when your mind collides with a new idea. And so sometimes you will read something, or sometimes somebody will tell you something, or you'll see something, and your mind collides with that idea, and like a billiard ball, it just goes off in a different direction. So I was reading a book by Ayn Rand. It was given to me at Christmas time when I was 21 years old. I sat there and I read it. And I sat in the sun and I read it and I got sunburned because I could not stop turning the pages. But here's what she said. She said the true measure of success in life is how capable you are of achieving your own happiness. And then she went on to say that your happiness comes when you live in harmony with the highest values that you have. And so you know that you are being the very best person you could possibly be. And that makes you genuinely and deeply happy. And then she goes on to say, which was quite interesting, is that all love is a response to values. We love another person because they represent values that we most love and respect and aspire to ourselves. And I've been married 36 years now to Barbara, and I could say that's perfectly true. When I met Barbara, I remember the day that the nickel dropped in my mind as I looked at her. And I said, this is a person with tremendous character. Tremendous character. And from that, we now have four grown children. They say, why did you marry your mother? And I say, I married her because of her character. She's just a really phenomenal person. She has really great values, which turned out to be absolutely true.
Well, let's get into the subject, Brian, of Chapter 3, creating your vision. What are some of our first steps in the process of becoming the person we desire to be? I'm thinking of topics from the book like Imagine No Limitations and Your Thoughts Become Your Realities and Becoming a Leader.
Yes. Well, it's interesting. I just had a long conversation with a video crew that I'm shooting with tomorrow. And last Friday, I spent 3 hours with a group. And they all had the same subject, self-limiting beliefs. Everything they're talking about is how do you help people eliminate their self-limiting beliefs. And when I first began speaking and teaching in 1981, the starting point of my two-day seminar was the law of belief. And it's really quite interesting how it keeps coming around like a merry-go-round, is that everything we do on the outside is determined by our beliefs about ourselves and about the world around us on the inside. Mm. And even if we have beliefs that are inconsistent with reality, they are false beliefs, if we believe them, we adhere to them. So your beliefs do become your reality. As William James of Harvard said, belief becomes the actual fact because you always live and act in harmony with what you believe. Mm. So coming back to creating an ideal life, and we use what we call the magic wand technique. And I do this with my audiences. I'll take out an expensive pen and I'll say, this is a magic wand I received from an admirer. And then somebody actually sent me a magic wand in a velvet bag that they bought at a magic store. And they said, now you don't have to use your pen. You can use a magic wand. So I waved the magic wand and I said, imagine that you had no limitations at all, in that you had all the time and all the money and all the skills and all the knowledge and all the experience, and that you could be or do or have anything you want in life. What would you want more than anything else? And then, of course, in the book and in life, I take them through a series of areas. The first area for most people is their love, their relationships. Mm. If you could make your home, your family, your life perfect in every respect, what would it look like and how would it be different from today? And the gentleman I was talking to today goes on public television and he teaches people a three-part theory, which he repeats over and over again. He's invited on television to take a person and sit them down, and he claims to be able to enable people to have breakthrough experiences. And he asks them just three questions, ABC, he calls it. A question is, what do you really want to do with your life? If your life was perfect, what would it be? And B question is, where are you today in terms of your perfect life? And the C question is, what's stopping you? Mm. What's holding you back from going from where you are to where you want to go? And I do strategic planning for large corporations, and we do the same exercise. First of all, you design your perfect future as if you were sending an order to a perfect future company, and you write it all down. This is what I would like delivered. And then you ask yourself, where are you now? And let us take financially, which is an area that concerns everybody, is if your financial life was perfect, how much would you have in the bank? And how much would you be earning from your savings and investments on a monthly basis? Mm. All right. And your ideal is to be earning from your investments the amount that you're earning from your work. So you can take and ask, how much does it cost for you to live today without any income at all for 1 month? If you lost your job or couldn't work for a month, how much would it cost you to maintain your current lifestyle? And then you ask yourself, all right, how much would you have to have to maintain your current lifestyle for a year and for 20 years? And the rule is you need to have about 20 years of your current expenditures put aside to be able to retire comfortably, to be able to take out 4% of that amount per year. That's what all the financial gurus will tell you. Mm. So then you say, all right, where are you today financially? And why aren't you where you want to go? What's it holding you back? What do you need to do starting today to make that future reality a truth? And then you take the first step. Mm. And we're always talking about the importance of deciding where you want to go and then taking the first step.
Well, what if you could save money on financial obligations you've already committed to? Well, that's what SoFi, one of our sponsors, wants to help you do. They're a leading marketplace lender, and they offer student loan, refinancing, mortgages, and personal loans for ambitious people just like you. Now, if you're carrying high student loan balances, you could actually save thousands of dollars by refinancing and consolidating your federal and private student loans at a lower rate. SoFi borrowers save on average of $14,000 over the life of their loans. In addition to savings, SoFi members benefit from unemployment protection. Should you lose your job, SoFi pauses your payment and provides access to a career services team for personalized career planning and job search assistance. Now, to check out a full list of products and benefits, visit SOFI.com/readtolead. And remember, as I said at the top of the show, for a limited time and as a listener to Read to Lead, you're eligible for a special $200 welcome bonus. That's cash in your hand when you refinance your student loans with SoFi. Just go to SOFI.com/readtolead for this special offer. And as always, all loans made by SoFi Lending Corp, NMLS number 1121636. And CFL license number 6054612. Brian, share if you would about the impact that discovering goals had on your life as a young man in your early 20s.
Yeah, well, I did not graduate from high school, but I had read a lot of magazines and stories when I was growing up about people who had traveled and who had had adventures. I learned later, by the way, that I was unwittingly programming myself. So when I left school, I worked in laboring jobs for a while, saved some money, and then I went off to see the world. And I worked on the ships, and I rode on buses, and I hitchhiked, and I did a lot of traveling. And one day I found myself broke with a no future door-to-door sales job, at which I wasn't very good, sleeping on the floor of a friend's small apartment. And I read this little page from a book that said, if you want to be successful, you have to have goals. And I had nothing to lose at that point. So I took out a scrap of paper and I wrote down 10 goals that I wanted to accomplish in the next month. And then I lost the book and I lost the paper. But 1 month later, my whole life had changed. It was almost like pushing down a dynamite detonator and then having this incredible explosion. My income jumped. My living standards changed. My clothing changed. The people, it was just remarkable. But I remember that everything that I had accomplished in the next 30 days, I'd written down on that piece of paper. So I became a completely addicted goal setter. And by the way, an exercise I teach all over the world, I've taught it to literally millions of people, which is life-changing, is just take a sheet of paper and write out 10 goals that you'd like to accomplish in the next 12 months. And then ask yourself, which one goal on this list, if I were to accomplish it, would have the greatest positive impact on my life? And that'll jump out at you. So put a circle around that and then make a list of everything you could do to achieve that goal and then take the first step and just work on that goal every day. They just did a very interesting study of wealthy people, people who started with nothing and became wealthy. They found that 85% of wealthy people have one big goal, the one we just talked about, that they work on 7 days a week. Only 3% of poor people have one big goal, and they don't work on it very often. So if you're looking for the reason why people become wealthy, 85% is because they have one big goal that they work on all the time. So that's what changed my life.
Connected to that, Brian, I run into a lot of people who are intrigued by the idea of working for themselves. Maybe they've worked for someone else their entire lives, or maybe moving into a better or completely different career late in life. And the thing that is often stopping them, I believe, is what you've labeled the allure of the comfort zone. Can you share what you mean by that?
Yes, well, human beings are in a very positive way, creatures of habit. I'm the best-selling time management author in the world, you know, without bragging, in 42 languages. So I've studied this subject for 30 years. And what I found is that in terms of time management, one of the things you do to get your time under control is you have certain rituals and you do things automatically and without thinking so that your mind is free to think about things that require thinking. So human beings are creatures of habit. You get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you get ready, you have breakfast, you drive to work. You don't even think about these things. These things are now automatic. Well, it's a natural tendency of human beings to make things automatic, even complex things, and then to resist any kind of change. They get into a comfort zone, and then they resist any kind of idea that they should move out of the comfort zone. And it goes back to this feeling of undeservingness. Whenever I write a book autograph, I always write, you can do it. You can do it. And everybody who reads that, well, I'd like to autograph a book for you. I'd say, Jeff, you can do it, Brian Tracy. And everybody looks at that and says, geez, that's a good idea. Yes, it is. Four of the most powerful words that a person can use in their whole life is just to say over and over again, in anticipating any new idea, I can do that. I can do that. I can do it. I can do it. And because of this, the power of your positive affirmations, what this does is it represses and eventually displaces the feelings of I can't do it. I can't do it. So fear is what holds us in our comfort zones. What if we try something and it doesn't work? Well, I tell my audiences, nothing works the first time. Sometimes it doesn't work 5 or 10 times. Nobody who was successful the first time, unless it's a Mark Zuckerberg or somebody who's done something remarkable. Steve Jobs failed for 15 years. He was a completely unpleasant person. He was fired and thrown out of almost every organization he went to. And finally, he matured. He didn't bathe for sometimes weeks at a time. When he came into a room, he absolutely stank. And he knew he stank. And he did it just to offend the people who were in the room. I mean, people had to sit as far away from him as they possibly could. And finally, he got better, didn't get a lot better. But when he came back into Apple, he had basically a 15-year period or quest to become a better person. It takes a long time to be successful. And nothing's going to work the first time. But here's the other thing, is we only learn to succeed by failing. So if a person wanted to start their own business, here's the great news, Jeff. It has never been easier or cheaper for a person to start a business today with the internet than in all of human history. You can literally pull up LegalZoom, you can register your business in your own name, push a button, and for $49.49, you are actually a legal business entity. You can then go onto the internet, you can go to Google and say, products to buy and sell. And they'll give you all kinds of companies that will provide you with products. And then you'll be able to send out messages and you'll be able to take orders. I have friends who will take you into a room and say, before you walk out of this room, you're going to have money in your bank account. And so he sits them all down, has them start a business, has them put in data lists, has them sell out products and put in their bank account number. And before they leave that room, the cash register is jinging. They're actually making money from something that they've sold online. This has never been possible in human history. Mm. When I started off, you have to have $50,000 to start a business. Today you need $50,000. So if a person is thinking of starting their own business, they should not hesitate. They say, I can do this. There's 30 million people who have started businesses in the U.S. Oh, by the way, women start businesses at a higher level than men, and women succeed at businesses at a higher level than men. And now the majority of small businesses are owned by women rather than by men. So there's no reason for a person to hold back. You don't have to lose or risk or be terrified that what if it doesn't work out? So what? I know lots of people who have started multiple businesses. And maybe only one of them will work.
Well, procrastination is perhaps the biggest obstacle for most of us when it comes to managing our time. You've hinted at some, Brian. Share some of your favorite techniques for overcoming procrastination.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Wall Street Journal just had a full big article in their personal session yesterday on overcoming procrastination. And today on one of my online sites, there's a great big thing about overcoming procrastination. And the simplest thing of all, it's, you know, how do you eat an elephant is the old question. And the answer is one bite at a time. What really stops people is the big task. So what you do very simply is you take a large task and then you break it down into as many small pieces as possible. Henry Ford said that anything can be accomplished if you break it down into enough small parts. And he became the richest man in the world, starting from being broke at the age of 42. So it's probably worth listening to. But if you take a big task and then you make a list of every single step that you're going to have to take, there's a wonderful book called The Checklist Manifesto that came out 3 or 4 years ago, written by a doctor. And he just basically shows that all of success in life comes from taking and writing checklists. And a checklist is an orderly sequence of the things that you need to do to achieve a goal, starting from the first one, then number 2 and number 3. Then what you do is you resolve is tomorrow, before I do anything, I'm going to start on Number one, I'm going to start on one task. Now, in my book called Eat That Frog, what we do is we say, pick the most important task you possibly can and start with it first thing in the morning. And don't check your email in the morning. Don't do anything other than starting and completing a single task. And even if it's a small task, and one of the techniques we say is break the task into very, very small pieces. So maybe it's only a 5-minute piece, but it's the getting started that is the key. It's like skiing. It's pushing off and starting and developing the momentum. So if you take a slice of the task, we call this the salami slice technique, and just do that one slice, you automatically get a feeling of endorphin from completing a task or part of a task. And you can actually program yourself or get yourself addicted to task completion by doing one piece of a task. I call it, it's an English expression called a job of work. It's one discrete piece of a task. So you do it from beginning to end and you get a little jolt of endorphin, which makes you happy, makes you proud. It gives you a feeling of well-being. It actually even makes you more creative. And so if you do a second little piece, you get another little jolt of endorphin, which makes you happy again. And pretty soon you get into a rhythm and you just do piece by piece by piece by piece. But the critical thing is take the first step. The critical thing is do the first thing.
Well, I have a couple of questions, Brian, I want to ask you, not directly related to the new book. But before I do, is there anything else from the book you want to make sure we know?
Just to, the real essence of the book, and I have to give my daughter, Christina, credit for this, is that you will only be really happy when you find yourself completely in balance with the person you are on the inside and what you care about and the things that you're doing on the outside. And you can always tell just simply by listening to that inner voice. That inner voice will always tell you if you're doing or not doing what is exactly right for you.
Well, I know you're an avid reader. I was wondering if you could name for us a couple of books you've read or maybe you're currently reading, Brian, that have had a huge impact on you, and share, if you can, how or why they've impacted you as they have.
Well, I read a lot of stuff, mostly in marketing and in business, but there's two books that I would just throw out there. They're both written by Jeffrey Colvin, who is a 33-year veteran editor at Fortune magazine. And the first one is called Talent is Overrated. And many people think, well, I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that because I just don't have the natural talent for it or the gift for it. Well, what he points out, and he quotes a lot of the research done by Dr. Anders Ericsson at the University of Florida. And what he did is 25 years of research into elite performance. Malcolm Gladwell wrote his book Outliers on this. It's research that I was actually reading 25 years ago. These guys have produced best-selling books on it. What they said is that a person becomes excellent over a long, long period of determined effort. A friend of mine who teaches writing says that the key to writing success is to just write. He said you can't get worse at writing by doing it. And Albert Hubbard, who was a great author of the last century, was always asked why he was so prolific. What was the secret? And he said the only way to learn to write is to write and write and write and write and write and write and write. And I'm a professional speaker, and it's the same thing. I teach professional speaking. The only way to learn to speak is to speak and speak and speak and speak and speak and speak and speak. So the very best researchers, and Jeffrey Colvin in his book, Talent is Overrated, shows that it's not a miracle. It's just a person embarked on something that they really cared about, whether it's music or sports or writing or art or business. And then they threw their whole heart into becoming better and better at it. Wonderful thing is the payoff, going back to endorphins, is as you feel yourself moving progressively forward toward achieving something that's important to you, you feel happy all the time. Daniel Pink, another recent book called Drive, discovered that what makes people the happiest in the world of work is a feeling of forward progress. They feel that they're growing and they're getting better and they're accomplishing better results. And it's this feeling of forward motion that causes people to be fully engaged with their work. It's when you feel that your job is going nowhere that you lose your desire for. And the second book that I mentioned that Jeffrey just wrote, and it's called, I just read it yesterday. It's called, Humans Are Underrated. I think that's what it was. What he's talking about is that today the most important skills are the empathetic skills, like you and I talking together, and the ability to interact and work well with others, to solve problems, to understand how people are thinking and feeling, to build teams. He said everything else is going to be replaced by computers. And all the mechanical, automatic things will be replaced by computers. But he said, for example, computers can do fantastic diagnostic work in medicine today. Mm. However, people still want to sit down with a doctor who can explain to them personally what their situation is and what they should do about it. We'll never get that from a machine. So the successful people of the future are going to be the people who have the most empathetic abilities, the abilities to interact and relate and understand others. And by which he says, and he quotes, women tend to be far more effective in these areas, which will be the most required skills of tomorrow, than men. And they find that teams of women are far more productive and effective than teams of men. And that if you put just one man on a team with several women, it actually lowers their overall productivity, which is a bit of a shocker.
Well, you brought up public speaking a moment ago. I wanted to ask you about that. In addition to repetition and just doing it again and again and again, what are some other tips you have, Brian, for delivering an impactful and memorable public talk?
Well, I have what I call Brian Tracy Speaking Academy, and I take 12 people, which I just did earlier this month, last month, and I take 12 people and I work with them for 3 full days, about 9 or 10 hours a day, videotaping them and playing it back and videotaping and playing them back. But my methodology is very simple. Is I teach them the principle and have them demonstrate it in front of the group and in front of a camera and then look at themselves. And for the first time this happens, it's quite shocking. Have you ever seen yourself videotaped? It's quite a shocking thing the first time. But then we say, all right, but we don't say you did this badly, you did that badly. You say, okay, now what would you improve next time? And this is a very important skill for life, by the way, is don't spend a second looking at things you did wrong. Just focus on things that you did that were good and things that you could improve. Just what did I do right? What would I do differently? And at the end of 3 days, we videotape them the final time and play their videos for the class. And everyone is amazed. They saw the first video, which took place at 8:30 in the morning when they first arrived. And they see the last video, which is at 5:30, 3 days later. And they're all astonished. Mm-hmm. You just cannot believe the improvement that takes place. My point is that in order to develop a skill, you have to learn and practice, learn and practice, learn and practice. I have a whole shelves full of books on professional speaking, also on selling, also on business. All the subjects that I speak on, I'm constantly immersed in learning more and more about those subjects. So if you want to be a better speaker, the starting point is get a book on speaking. Mine is a good book, Speak to Win. Dale Carnegie's book, How to Influence People in Public Speaking. There's some wonderful books that are out there written by people with years of experience, and they will tell you, when you open up with an audience, do this. When you move from point to point, make it a clear transition. When you make a point that's important, stop and let people absorb it. I mean, there's all kinds of these little things that make an average speaker into a great speaker.
Well, finally, I want to ask Brian, what is next for you? What are you and your team working on now that has you excited?
Well, I'm really excited today about a subject called business model innovation. And I'm doing a major in this. I major in a subject every couple of years. Mm. And what it says is that about 80 to 90% of businesses today are based on the wrong business model. And what does that mean? It means a business model is the way that a company, all the things that a company does to generate at the end of the day, a profit. In other words, rather than a loss. And there's a whole series of steps, like a piece of parts of an engine that generate the profit. And many companies today are using a business model that may have been appropriate for them at a different time, but the world has changed and it's no longer the right business model. The part about this that interests me is there is a life design model as well. Each person, you and me, have a business model for our lives. Mm. And this is the way that we live our life. This is the way we do our living. This is the way we relate to our family. This is the way we interact in society. Now, in business model, you can test very quickly if your business model is working because you'll have a continuing growth in sales and profitability. Perfect example today is McDonald's. McDonald's is working with a broken business model. Mm. And they're trying desperately to solve the business model because their sales are no longer rising steadily and predictably. So with your life, you can always tell if your personal business model, your personal life model is correct, if you are happy most of the time. If you wake up in the morning and you're happy most of the time, if you get angry, but the anger disappears very quickly, sort of like it just goes away. But if you're angry, or if you're unhappy, or if you're stressed, or if you're frustrated, it simply means you got the wrong model. You're just using the wrong business model or the wrong life design model, and you have to stand back, just going back to our book and everything else. And so I teach this in businesses, and businesses are shocked. Every time I speak to a group of business owners, they come up and they look very guilty. They say, you know, can I talk to you about our business model? Because we're not getting the kind of results we used to. I say, it's not that the product is wrong or the people are wrong. It's just like companies like, perfect example, BlackBerry and Nokia. When Apple came out with the iPhone, the business model for successful smartphones changed forever. And they just kept on going for 5 years until they went bankrupt. Mm. Instead of reinventing themselves and developing new technology and responding to the competition, they just marched in lockstep until they went over the cliff. And many, many companies are doing that today. And every unhappy person needs to redesign their life in some way.
Well, Brian, this is your second book, I believe, with Christina. Any plans for the two of you to write any books in the future?
Yes. We have the third book on the drawing boards. It's going to be called Stand Tall. And it's based on a lot of work we've done on the peak performance woman. Mm. And what is it that women have that enable them to succeed greatly, both in their personal life and work? And it's going to be much more practical. Balance Point deals with the inner person, and Stand Tall will be time management techniques, work techniques, how do you get a better job, how to get your salary increased, how to negotiate, how to work with people of different personalities and people of different generations. So it's going to be a very practical how-to book, how to be more effective, especially as a woman in the world of work.
Well, I have had more requests from listeners to have you on this show than I think any other individual. So thank you for taking the time out to be with us today. We really appreciate all the wisdom you've shared with us, and I highly encourage everyone to get this book. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you, Jeff. It's just been a real pleasure and honor to be with you.
Boy, a lot of wisdom there, in case you hadn't picked up on it just yet. Connect with Brian on Twitter. He's at Brian Tracy. That's B-R-I-A-N. T-R-A-C-Y on Twitter. All the books, resources, and other links we talked about can be found on the show notes page, a page created especially for this episode. You can find that at readtoleadpodcast.com/097 for episode 97. Remember our sponsors, SoFi, SOFI.com/readtolead, and check out the UpDesk, the motorized desk that is in your future. readtoleadpodcast.com/desk. And finally, if you're looking for a great fitness-related podcast, I want to recommend my friend Drew Tadia and his podcast, Exploring Mind and Body, at exploringmindandbody.com. He interviews fitness experts from around the world talking about improving your lifestyle, detoxing your body, reducing your stress, and more. Drew himself has designed his own whole food supplement. He's the author of Detoxify Yourself. He's also a personal trainer and teaches fitness classes. Great podcast. Again, you can find it at exploringmindandbody.com. Well, that's going to do it for this week, and I look forward to seeing you next time for the Read to Lead podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to the Read to Lead podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Become a vital member of the community. Visit us on the web at readtoleadpodcast.com. Until next time, remember, leaders read and readers lead.